We all know the key to good dental care. Brush your teeth twice a day, floss, and see a dentist on a regular basis. But for thousands across Illinois, that's easier said than done because they don't have insurance. Tomorrow, more than 1,000 volunteer dentists, hygienists, assistants, and students from across the state are headed to Southern Illinois to get ready for a dental care clinic. They'll be provided an estimated $1 million in free care to anyone who needs it.
For some people who hadn't had front teeth for a decade, to walk out of there and be able to smile and show some fake teeth that looked really good, I mean, they were in tears.
We'll explain why the need is especially great here in Illinois. Plus, two Illinois engineering students weren't surprised by the outcome of the Brexit vote. Why? They built software to analyze social media.
Social media is just, it's just public opinion. It's, people want to put that out there. This is truly how they feel.
It's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Good morning. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. There are millions of people in Illinois on Medicaid, and while there's no shortage of dentists in our state, only a fraction of them accept Medicaid patients. Needless to say, the need is great, so great that the last time the Illinois State Dental Society hosted a free dental care clinic, that was 2 years ago in Peoria, people started lining up the night before. Here's a little bit of audio from that event, courtesy of the Illinois State Dental Society Foundation.
It's been very difficult for me to afford any dental for a long time, and my mouth hurts.
I don't have dental insurance. I'm on disability. I don't work. You know, I have Medicare, but Medicare doesn't cover dental.
I waited all night because I wanted to. I was one of the first people here. I'm a single dad. I take care of my children. I might not have all the money to go pull out my teeth, but I love my children, and I'm not ready to go anywhere anytime soon.
They're great. They're so compassionate. They treat you with love and kindness.
This year I was the lead of the prosthodontic lab. We made the partial dentures for patients who were missing teeth.
I smiled anyway, but now the smile is even greater.
Thanks to the Illinois State Dental Society Foundation from that. Those are the voices of some of the people who received care at the most recent free clinic that was put on by the Dental Society Foundation and the Mission of Mercy in Peoria. The next one starts tomorrow. It's in the Gateway Center in Collinsville near St. Louis. And more than 1,000 volunteer dentists, hygienists, dental assistants, and dental students from throughout Illinois are going to be provided an estimated $1 million in free care. Joining us to talk about this and why the need is so great is Dr. Randall Markarian. He's an orthodontist. He's co-chair of the Mission of Mercy with the Illinois State Dental Society. And he joins us now from Collinsville, where I know he's been very busy working all morning to get everything set up for this clinic. Dr. Markarian, thank you for taking the time to talk with us this morning.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about these clinics. I know you all started them every couple of years beginning in 2010. Did people really spend the night outside in order to be the first ones let in 2 years ago in Peoria?
They did, actually. And thankfully, actually, 2 years ago in Peoria, there was some bad weather the night before, and the center we were at let them stay inside. So overnight, we probably had 200 to 300 people that either spent the night or got there at 4 in the morning to make sure they were in line. The dental services that we provide are provided on a first-come, first-served basis, so they wanted to be the first in line to get their treatment.
So are you anticipating that people may be showing up at the Gateway Center this evening? I know you're starting tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
We are, and if it follows the pattern of the last two Missions of Mercy, really probably later this afternoon we'll have some people showing up to get in line. So we are expecting the same.
Now, obviously this speaks to the need for people to have this type of free dental care service. I know the goal for you all is to hopefully treat about 2,000 patients over the next 2 days. I imagine that's just a drop in the bucket in terms of the number of people in our state who lack access to dental care.
It is. It is. And these events are fantastic in that, you know, helping 2,000 people is a great achievement. But when you realize that there are essentially millions of people in Illinois on Medicaid that may not have access to the services, and a big portion of that is because currently in Illinois, Medicaid provides coverage for children through the system. And it doesn't make adult coverage available across the state. So it makes events like this basically a magnet that draws in many of these adults that haven't seen a dentist in years or, you know, in some cases actually decades, because they have not been able to afford dental care. It gets them a chance to get their most significant dental needs addressed by, you know, trained dentists. So,
Dr. Markarian, I think people might be thinking about the Affordable Care Act and wondering, didn't that help people get dental coverage?
The Affordable Care Act only included a pediatric benefit. That was one of the essential benefits that was required or included in the Affordable Care Act. They did not add adult dental benefits to the Affordable Care Act. It just wasn't included.
Okay. And then when you were talking about Medicaid, is it also difficult for Medicaid patients throughout Illinois to find doctors?
It can be. You know, there are really some obstacles that make it difficult for dentists to sign up for the Medicaid program and be a provider. And some of that is related to the level of funding that the state provides for Medicaid. The dentists that provide the care are essentially providing care at a loss. It's costing them money. They're getting paid less than what it costs them to do the procedure. And Illinois is one of the lowest states in the United States for Medicaid reimbursement rates. And so if Illinois could somehow address the reimbursement rates, I think it would certainly increase the number of dentists that would want to provide care if they could do it without essentially losing money by treating the patient.
Dr. Markarian, I just want to underscore that and repeat what you said just to make that clear for everybody. What you're saying is the Medicaid reimbursement rates that are offered right now for Illinois dentists are actually less than what it costs dentists to provide this service. So if the dentists who do help Medicaid patients are actually losing money?
They're actually losing money. So just as a general example, it costs about 66 cents on a dollar for the expenses that a dental office has, and Medicaid is paying it at 40 cents or 45 cents on the dollar. So it makes it, from a business standpoint, difficult for dentists to do that. We would love to provide that care, and many people go ahead and do treat some Medicaid patients because of that, but it makes it difficult to make that a significant portion of one's practice because it's not sustainable. And it's a shame because it leaves a significant population in Illinois in a position to not receive their needed and necessary dental care.
I want to ask you about those rates and how they get set. But just before we get to that, if a Medicaid patient, so you're based in Swansea, that's near East St. Louis. So if there was someone in your area who needed to have oral surgery, how far would they have to go in order to find a provider that accepts Medicaid?
I have patients that have to drive to Chicago to find an oral surgeon that can provide, that will take the Medicaid benefit. It's been a real challenge with certain specialties of dentistry to find providers who are part of the Medicaid system. And that's really, I think that's one of the biggest problems is having access to certain specialty care, especially oral surgeons, because the Medicaid population tends to need more extractions and therefore tends to need the services of an oral surgeon. And it's really been a challenge to get people to want to sign up for it that are oral surgeons.
Mm-hmm. And I know the Illinois State Dental Society has been pretty involved in an effort to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates. How does that, what needs to be done in order to have that change?
Illinois would have to have a budget.
We're going to get to that in a minute, but before Illinois having a budget, what else?
I'm afraid that in the current environment that no one wants to talk about increasing spending in any area. However, I think that if we could have a serious discussion about how adults with dental emergencies end up in emergency rooms, with physicians looking at them and essentially prescribing an antibiotic and a painkiller for them, rather than dealing with their dental need at a huge expense, that if we could take that money and apply it to adult coverage or expanded Medicaid coverage across the board, that it certainly would make a lot more sense than wasting it by having people go to the emergency room where they're not receiving a definitive treatment for their problem.
Right. And I know the American Dental Association estimates that actually these emergency room visits you're talking about simply for oral health costs our healthcare system as much as $2 billion a year. Are people, and I wonder, is that at all a part of the discussion of how much we're probably spending? And so it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, we're actually spending more in Illinois because we're not, or would you think it's accurate to say we're spending more in Illinois because we're not paying for the preventative care up front?
I think that's absolutely true. One thing that the state did that helped somewhat is they did restore some limited adult dental benefits if the adults are being treated by one of the dental schools within the state. But, you know, and they realized that the benefit of that was to help reduce the wasted money of patients going to the emergency room. But when you have two dental schools in Chicago and one dental school in Alton, Illinois, which is near the St. Louis metro area, the people in between don't have a lot of choices on how they can get there. That could be quite a drive to get to any of the schools. So it would be great if the state of Illinois would make the adult Medicaid benefit available across the board and be able to help everybody across, or all the adults across the state.
Dr. Markarian, you said that Illinois was one of the lowest rates. Is Illinois unusual in the lack of dental care benefits that it offers its residents then compared to other states?
I wouldn't say unusual, but again, the reimbursement rates for what Illinois does provide are, you know, 48th out of 50. The lack of adult coverage across the board, I mean, it is limited. But there are other states that are also quite limited in the Medicaid services that they provide for dental. So Illinois is not alone in that, but certainly I think Illinois needs to try to be a leader in preventive care for the dental population, because if we can change our thinking away from, you know, we're going to wait until we need to pull these teeth or do a root canal or do a filling on this patient and try to prevent all that. I mean, certainly that's how you bring the cost of dental care down, is by educating patients as to what they should be doing to take care of their teeth, including being able to get preventive care from their dentists, cleanings and fluoride and sealants and the things that should be done.
Dr. Markarian, we are going to talk about, after the break, we are going to talk about the state budget impasse in particular, go back and revisit one Champaign dentist who's owed a lot of money for the state for reimbursements. That's a whole other issue that we haven't even gotten to yet, and that's also impacting dentists throughout the state. Is there any legislation in process right now to raise this rate of Medicaid reimbursement?
There is nothing currently pending or proposed, as far as I know, to change the Medicaid reimbursement rates. And again, I think all of this hinges on the state of the budget, and they can't have the discussions about raising reimbursement until they can figure out what they're going to do with the rest of the budget. So I think that it's something that will come up, but it's currently not in discussion.
Let's talk just for a few minutes about what you are doing to help folks immediately who are probably, and I imagine, I wonder if there are, we heard at the beginning of this hour from a woman, she sounded so happy that she wasn't in pain anymore. Are many of the patients you're treating who are going to be coming in tomorrow, are they showing up in a lot of pain? Are people in pretty bad shape?
They're, yes. I mean, in Peoria, for example, we had so many patients that it wasn't just one tooth that was a problem. I mean, they'd come in and they'd actually need five or six teeth extracted because their dental health had been neglected for so long. And a lot of these people are in pain and just, you know, do what it takes to get by. And that's what makes this rewarding, that we're helping them out. But it also makes it kind of sad to know that there is such extensive unmet dental need in the general population, and that goes, you know, that doesn't get treated, and so you know, we get people that haven't seen a dentist, and years is nothing. I mean, I talked with several people at the last event that hadn't seen a dentist in well over 10 years, And so, of course, you expect the worst when a patient says that. When they, if they haven't had care in 10 years, you expect the worst on what's going to be going on with their mouth. And unfortunately, that's what we see a lot of at these events.
What are you going, what kind of care are you going to be offering for people at the Gateway Center over the next 2 days, or 3 days, actually, right?
Right, the next 2 days.
2 days.
What we're going to be offering is they're going to be able to have access to fillings, cleanings, root canals, extractions, and then we're also going to be able to make a limited number of partials, which are replacing teeth that are missing. And what we focus on when we do the partials are the front teeth, so that we have people that said they haven't smiled in years because they lost a front tooth or a couple of front teeth, and we're providing something that gives them a boost in self-confidence. And some of those patients, when we gave them their partials and they now all of a sudden had front teeth that they could smile with, these were the patients that just, I mean, they broke down in tears because they never thought they'd be able to get that kind of dental care. They just thought they were doomed to not having front teeth. And they were so elated by what had gone on. I mean, they just broke down in tears and they wanted to hug everybody in the department. It really was a feel-good moment, but I felt so bad that they had suffered for so many years without front teeth. It was sad to see that many people. And at the last event, we were able to help about 140 people get some front teeth. But we do provide essentially the most emergency or the most significant dental need that the patient has, whether it's, you know, the extractions or a root canal or whatever. We also treat the kids, and thankfully, you know, the kids are getting cleanings and sealants and fluoride treatment to help protect their teeth. And
yeah, so it sounds like lots of treatment happening. We're going to take a break, Dr. Markarian. We're going to come back and continue this conversation about dental care in Illinois. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thousands of volunteers are coming from across the state of Illinois, hoping to serve patients for dental care in a clinic that's happening at the Gateway Center in Collinsville. It's near St. Louis. We're joined by the co-chair of the Mission of Mercy with the Illinois State Dental Society. He's an orthodontist who's helping organize this. Dr. Randall Markarian has been talking to us about the state of dental care throughout Illinois, the need that millions, as he said, of people have. You know, Dr. Markarian, just wanted to ask you two more questions. I think many people may not be aware, as we're talking about this, we're talking about people who are in pain, but there are lots of links that, that we have for our oral health that's linked to overall health. Can you give us an example of why it's important for people to maintain sort of good or overall oral health?
Sure. Well, you know, I was thinking about this because there are so many systemic diseases that can show up in the mouth by the condition of the mouth. And so, you know, they always say that the eyes are a window into a person's soul. Well, really, the mouth is a window into a person's overall health. And so diseases like diabetes and heart disease and that can be affected and show effects within the mouth. So it's important for patients to visit the dentist or to be able to visit a dentist, because the dentist sometimes is the first person to recognize diseases like diabetes or certain oral cancers that the physicians may not actually be screening for. And then the connection between heart disease and how patients take care of their teeth, the overall health of their mouth, patients with better oral hygiene are less likely to have heart disease. I mean, there is a correlation between that.
Dr. Markarian, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to just ask you very practically, what do people need to do if there's listeners who want to go to this clinic in Collinsville on Friday and Saturday? What do they need to bring?
What they should come down. They don't need to bring much of anything. Maybe a bottle of water or a snack, although we are going to provide some snacks and water for the patients that are waiting in line. The best thing is to arrive early. We do start at 6 a.m. every morning, and there are already hundreds of patients in line, usually at 6 a.m. So my advice would be to get down here as early in the day as possible so that they can make sure that they receive care that they need.
Dr. Randall Markarian is an orthodontist. He's co-chair of the Mission of Mercy. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Markarian. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Dr. McCarron was talking about the state budget impasse. You know, before it was resolved temporarily, we spoke with Champaign dentist Dr. Benjamin Scott. He's been owed more than $300,000 by the state. Those are insurance claims paid to him on behalf of the workers he treats. So this is completely apart from the Medicaid issue we were talking about before. Dr. Scott joins us now to give us an update. Dr. Scott, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So I guess the big question is, have you gotten reimbursed from the state yet? Have you gotten those claims paid back?
No, we haven't. The temporary budget impasse helped a couple areas that were in need, but they did not affect the dentists.
And so how much money are you owed now from the state?
It's similar to when we talked last. You know, I don't know the exact figure. You know, with each passing month, of course, it goes up, but you know, it's just kind of a steady and gradual process. You know, if you recall, it's been approximately since August of last year since we'd gotten a payment from the state's Delta Dental.
So August of 2015 was the last time you received a payment from Delta Dental for all of the people that you treat who are state workers?
Yes, with the exception there was one payment that came at the beginning of this year as the state found some funds somewhere and did give one payment in.
And Dr. Scott, is it about two-thirds of your practice are state workers? Is that about the ratio of how many people who are in your practice are state workers that you're waiting on payments?
I would say so. You know, I've never run, you know, an actual census to see that, but it is a very large number. You know, being in Champaign and being only a couple miles from campus, we do have a lot of state of Illinois employees, and you know, also being a network, as we shared before, it's hard to find a network dentist anymore because of the problems going on. So we do have people that search our office out just for the advantages that they're able to get.
And in fact, I should disclose to everybody at this time, you're now my dentist because I had such a hard time trying to find someone as well. So, Dr. Scott, can you explain the whole in-network thing for people who are not familiar, what you've chosen to do for your practice? Because some people are making people pay up front, but you're not doing that.
Yeah, if a dentist decides to be an in-network dentist, it means basically that someone that it works for the state that finds that dentist, they can go and have their regular preventive care and or restorative care done at a set fee that was designated by the network. So it means as long as they work within their maximum and have paid their deductible, they don't expect to have anything owed out of pocket.
And why did you decide to do that instead of making people pay up front? Because some people can choose to do the opposite of what you've done.
That's right, and you know, I even did that for a number of years in my practice, but the reason that my practice did it was basically noticing that when we had patients in that were paying up front and they had needed care, they would often delay it because of the cost of doing treatment. And, you know, it was affecting the practice, and it was also a way that personally, I wasn't feeling comfortable running the practice. I didn't like it that patients were delaying things and maybe needing, you know, more significant work down the road because they couldn't afford it. So that was the biggest reason. Also, what I was noticing is just the number of patients coming through the doors was slowing down. We all know that the economy is, you know, experienced significant inflation as far as all the products that we buy, you know, our groceries and so on. However, the rate of pay has not changed in a very long time in Central Illinois. So expendable income was down, and I just made the decision that I wanted to do that for my patients and be a source in this area for people to be able to find care.
You know, Dr. Scott, we were just talking about Medicaid patients earlier. Is that something that you do? Do you treat Medicaid patients?
No, unfortunately, I don't. And the reason is the reimbursement that Medicaid will give a dentist for services is at such a low rate that it doesn't even cover the overhead in my practice and in a number of practices
throughout Illinois. The State Dental Society has been working for years trying to increase the reimbursement rate, because the thing is, there's so many dentists that would be willing to help. Even, you know, if we said, you know, let's all just take on, you know, two or three Medicaid patients per month to kind of help this problem, I think a lot of us would. But unfortunately, because the pay is lower than the cost that it is to treat the patients, a lot of us cannot.
Dr. Scott, let's go back to, I know when we last talked, when we were talking about the money that was owed to you by the state, you were planning to sell that debt. Have you done that so you could get the payment?
I'm still in the process of doing it. I've run into just kind of a weird little hiccup with the process. But from what I understand, it's still one of the best options for people to do. You know, I've heard rumors that even Governor Jim Edgar has gotten behind it and thinks that it's a good thing for those that are needing an out. So
yeah, he's actually, it's my understanding, it's actually one of his companies, or he's involved with one of the companies that is actually buying up debt.
Oh, great. That's awesome. Yeah, so, you know, I'm actually a big fan of a lot of the stuff that he's done. So, again, probably another little bit of peace of mind. But no, I have not as of yet.
And when you heard about the stopgap budget, did you think it was going to solve your problems?
I hope so. In the back of my head, I just had this feeling that, you know, it was the state's way of kind of inching a few things along that had to come along, you know, roads and universities and schools. You know, I think I applaud them for doing something, and I'm so glad that everyone can come back to school and that we can, you know, make some of the repairs in the state. But I was very suspicious that this very thing would happen. We'd still be stuck where we're at.
What do you want people to know now?
You know, there's not a lot different than before in that it's just, I guess, possibly call your legislators and just say, you know, we really would like an end to this solution. It's affecting everybody's everyday lives, and, you know, we are paying taxes, and we should expect to run like a normal functioning state.
Well, and for you, for your business, this has been a year and a half. I know when we talked earlier, certainly this is, you've been in practice for a long time. You've been able to financially absorb most of this. How much longer, if this goes on through November, how much longer can you continue without getting paid for the services that you've been rendering for a year and a half?
It's I don't know. It's unknown, really, in my practice. It's one of those things that I don't foresee being able to go into 2017 and stay in network unless I chose the healthcare finance option.
And the healthcare finance option is the selling off of the debt?
Right.
Okay.
Basically selling the debt and the interest owed by the state.
Right. And so that's what you lose out on. If you sell the debt, you lose out on the 9% interest that the state was supposed to pay you as well, right?
Correct.
Hmm. That's Dr. Benjamin Scott. He's a Champaign dentist. Thank you for joining us for an update about your practice, Dr. Scott. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
More than 60 police officers, their families, and friends started a cycling journey this morning at one end of the state. They're riding more than 90 miles a day to honor officers killed in the line of duty. And the money that they're raising is to benefit surviving family members and loved ones. Joining us now from the Illinois chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors is Mark Hannon. He's also with the Wheaton Police Department. He's an auxiliary officer there, and he's been involved in this ride for more than a decade. He's joining us now live from the lead car with the cyclists. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla. Thanks for having us.
You guys started at the Mississippi River this morning. Where are you now?
Right now, we're just pulling into Waverly, which is about 35 miles south and west of Springfield, Illinois. So everything's going great. It's a little warm, but everybody's in great spirits. We're having a great time.
Great. Can you describe what it looks like? You're in the lead car. There's cyclists. Where are you guys going?
Sure. We have several jurisdictions, police departments that are in front of us. Some are on motorcycles. Some of them are in police cars or SUVs. It's kind of almost like a small parade of sorts. So we're under police escort. We have approximately 53 riders who are riding two abreast, kind of on the right side of the road. And we're going about 13, 15 miles an hour. So that's what we look like. And personally, it's a great sight.
Where are you? What's the plan? What's the route that you guys are going to be going through the next couple of days?
Okay, well, tonight we're going to end in Springfield. We'll be staying at the University of Illinois Springfield campus. And tomorrow night we'll end up at ISU, Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal. And then we'll continue on into the Chicago area, just outside of Chicago. We'll be staying in Lombard, Illinois. And then we're kind of taking a deviation this year. Normally we go into Chicago and dip our front tire into Lake Michigan to complete our journey. But this year, because of a line of duty death in McHenry County, we're going up to Woodstock, Illinois, to honor that police officer that was killed.
Mark, can you tell me more about the four officers you all are riding for this year?
Well, actually, we're honoring a number of officers. Some officers who were killed or died in the line of duty outside of Illinois who have family members here in Illinois. Just on our last break, we honored two officers, one from New Mexico whose sister lives in Litchfield, which is not too far from where we just passed through. But the four officers are from Illinois. And what we do is we honor and remember the officers, but we also want to meet their families and make sure that their families know that their officers and their sacrifice will never be forgotten.
So what do you do when you say you honor them? Do you stop? Do you meet the family members? What do you guys do?
Yes, there's a website that provides us information in the background on the officers. It's usually, their name, their badge number, the circumstances surrounding their death. It's called the Officer Down Memorial page. And a lot of our survivors and even police departments across the country are familiar with that website. They send out actual notifications to police departments and people who subscribe to their website so that we can know right away when one of our colleagues has died in the line of duty. So what we do is we read the dedication, we observe a moment of silence, and we allow the families to speak to us.
It sounds like it's a very emotional thing for all of you.
It's really a great experience. It's a great experience for the police officers who are on the ride, for the supporters, people, regular citizens who have kind of joined our group. We've adopted them. We've accepted them into our group and the survivors as well. It's just a tremendous, tremendous experience, but it's also a healing journey of sorts. And one of the things that we share with our riders, particularly our new riders, is we say, this is a journey and you just don't know where it's going to take you, because the riders who are behind us, physically, they're going through a lot of pain, a lot of struggle, but they're surrounded by people who care for them. The people that come out in the communities across Illinois have just been fantastic, and that's been going on for years now. So it's really, you just get a great warm feeling from this entire experience.
That's Mark Hannon. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. He's an auxiliary police officer with the Wheaton Police Department. He's one of the organizers of this ride. You'll see them, as he said, going throughout Illinois. Mark, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Have a safe ride.
Nyla, thanks so much.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As you just heard, several dozen people are cycling throughout the state of Illinois beginning today and throughout Saturday to honor fallen police officers. They're being supported on their ride by the Illinois State Police, who are also having an event this weekend to benefit the Illinois State Police Memorial Park. Before we were talking about bicycles, this is motorcycles. Joining us now is Jack Garcia. He's a chairperson of the Illinois State Police Memorial Park. He's also a chief investigator with Cook County State Attorney's Office. Jack, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Nyla. Thank you for having me.
This motorcycle ride to Springfield starts at five different starting points throughout the state. Why was it important for you all to do that?
Well, what it was, we wanted to be inclusive. The state police is a big organization, you know, and we have officers spread out through across the state. So in order to be inclusive of everyone, we wanted to give opportunity for everyone to participate. So rather than starting at one central location or north or southern location, we broke it up into different locations in order to maximize everybody being able to participate.
And where are those locations?
The north end starts in District 15 State Police Headquarters in Downers Grove, Illinois. Then there is a southern location in Dwight, a central location in Bloomington, and then the south locations are O'Fallon, Illinois, and in Carlinville.
Right, and that's south. Those are south of Springfield, so people will be coming
Correct.
From all over and coming into Springfield. Jack, this ride is to benefit the Illinois State Police Memorial Park. For people who aren't aware, where's the park, and when was it started, or when was it created?
The Illinois State Police Heritage Foundation received the park property. It's located at the corner of 6th and Lawrence Avenue, which is kind of kitty corner from the cathedral, in 2007. Since then, we began working with an architect and getting a park designed, which we have all that work done, and then we began the big task of raising the funding to build the park. So if you've gone by the location, you'll see the site work has been done where the park has been pretty much demoed so we can begin the process of the construction work.
And what's the goal? What would you guys like to look like eventually?
If you go on now on our the Heritage Foundation website, which is pretty simple, isphf.org, everybody can see the park, the architect's renderings and everything. And basically what it'll be is a little story. At one end of the park, it'll start talking about the life of service of a state trooper and how that service progresses down a line. And then there's a break in the line, and that's either through, line of duty death, and then there'll be a wall there with all the names of the officers, or it'll continue on to a reflecting pond for the people that are fortunate to, make it to retirement.
Jack, how many names will be on the memorial?
Right now, there's been 64 officers killed in the line of duty since the state police started in 1922.
And you all, of course, started this ride and started planning all of this. You guys have been organizing this for years. I know you had your plans in place, of course, before the Dallas shooting last week. I wonder if you feel like your thoughts are also with, as you all are riding this weekend, also with families in Texas right now as well.
You know what? There is a bond through, for all first responders, because we live our life by an oath. And that oath is what binds us, I believe. But this weekend, for our troopers, for all first responders and those in Dallas, it's just an everlasting reminder of all the sacrifices made by the brave men and women of law enforcement. And our park is just going to be a place to honor and remember those officers and their families who have given so much protecting the citizens of our state.
Jack, for people who don't ride motorcycles or other, are they also welcome to join you all, or is this just motorcycles?
Absolutely. This ride includes, although there's a big motorcycle contingent, that also includes cars, people who just want to participate. You don't have to even participate in the ride. You can show up at Troopers Lodge 41, which is in Springfield off of I-55 and Toronto Road, and just, come for the raffles and silent auctions in the evening and have dinner. You can participate that way. You don't even have to actually go on the ride if you just want to come to the event.
And that's on Saturday in Springfield, Jack. Can you remind us of the details of that?
Yes, it's on Saturday in the ride. All the legs start, throughout the state in the morning, stop at a couple locations. We have lunch in Bloomington where the ride concludes at Troopers Lodge 41. In Springfield, which again is right off of Toronto Road and I-55, and we should be there, probably 3:30. All the participants in the ride, and then dinner's at 5 o'clock. There's silent auction items, there's raffles, and what's nice about our Memorial Park is that everybody who is working for this park is a volunteer. There is no money paid to everybody. Everybody's a volunteer. So if you donate $1 or $10, every cent of that money goes to the park, which I think is important.
That's Jack Garcia. He's chairperson of the Illinois State Police Memorial Park. He's a retired first deputy director of the Illinois State Police. Jack, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me, and again, thank you for your support.
Many were surprised by the outcome of the UK vote a few weeks ago to leave the European Union, but not two Illinois engineering students. They predicted that Britain would leave the EU a week before the vote, and they did it with TweetSense. That's a technology they built to predict vote results. It's based on what people share on social media, on news comments, basically everything that people write online without asking any questions. We're joined by Cody Pulowski and William Wijaya, the founders of TweetSense. The company was created last year when both of them were freshmen at the University of Illinois. William's studying electrical engineering, and Cody is studying computer science, and both of them are in studio with me. Hey, guys, thanks for being here.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Cody, can we start with explaining what TweetSense is and how does it work?
Yeah, so at its core, it's a natural language processing engine with a bit of machine learning. So essentially what we're doing is pulling all of this data that's available online and reading through it and running it through our engine and trying to understand what people mean when they speak about certain subjects. So, for instance, gun control, whether people feel positively or negatively about that, and how subjective their comments are.
William, you are the one who came up with all of this. What made you start thinking about measuring this or trying to understand it better?
Yeah, I came up with this around last year in a statistics class, actually. I was studying education in relation to voting behavior, and I found out, you know, that the way that people have been gathering public opinion, it hasn't changed since 1936, when what George Gallup did was revolutionary, you know, calling people as opposed to sending letters. But nowadays, that's sort of being supplanted right now. Calling is not an accurate way to get people's opinions anymore. The response rates are very low, lower than about 20%. They're not representative of the population anymore. So I had some experience with computer science, and I started building this out with natural language processing, and enough of a minimum viable product to predict the Chicago elections, the Chicago mayoral elections last year in 2015.
So let's talk about that election, because that was actually really close, the final election, right? You're not talking about the final election between Mayor Rahm Emanuel and his opponent, Chuy Garcia. That was actually a really close election. And right before, I think there was a lot of concern that people really didn't know how it was going to go. What did you do to measure sentiment? How did you figure out who would be voting for Mayor Emanuel versus Chuy Garcia?
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting one. It turns out we just had to type in, you know, the words Chuy and Rahm in, and then sort of get the feel, the positivity and negativity when people were talking about either candidate. So for an example, like if someone mentioned, oh, I'm not really sure about Chuy's policy on this particular law, then that would bring down his sentiment to a negative amount. And we did that. That was done by our engine, TweetSense, over hundreds and hundreds of comments on social media over the course of several days to get that sort of picture of what people would vote.
So, Cody, what William's describing is actually really hard to do, to measure sentiment, because it's hard to have a machine do that, because there's a lot of nuances to language. People can say things that can be misconstrued as positive or negative. How much human interaction is there with the engine? How is it learning to be able to filter this?
Right, yeah. So basically over the course of the past several months, we've been training our platform to sort of pick out certain errors in language, one of which, something we probably should have thought of sooner, was Trump. You know, the word Trump.
Right, actually, that's a good point, right? Because you would say that's a positive term, right?
Very conflicting results there. So just little stuff like that we've been sort of picking through, sort of refining our whole analysis process. But for the most part, it's just natural language processing and machine learning on top.
So you guys were at Chicago Tech Week a while ago, and that's when that's when this idea of coming up to use TweetSense for the Brexit vote came up. How did you all, how did you search for that?
Right, so people were actually coming up to our table just to check us out, and they saw that our whole platform was understanding public opinion. So they're like wondering what people are saying about the Brexit vote, and the fact that the referendum was the day of, they started typing in leave versus stay in terms of Brexit, and the curve for leave was actually positive, not by much, but it was actually a positive slope, and the stay line was, I'd say, it's fairly flat, below leave. And a lot of people saw this, and they were like, that's not what people are saying. I don't think that's going to happen. They wouldn't let that happen. You know, the pound would crash, everything, stuff would go wrong. So we sort of, we stayed up pretty late that night tracking
that. The night before the vote, or was this?
It was while it was happening, while the results were coming in.
Okay.
And we kept tracking it on our platform and the actual live poll results. Yeah, and we were pretty ecstatic about that.
William, how do you want to use this for the election, for the presidential election?
For the presidential election, really interesting, actually. I just got in contact with someone who potentially wants to connect us with the Gary Johnson campaign, so we could be doing work for actually the sort of third presidential candidate there, get excellent feedback on what this can do for politicians, what this can do in general in the polling scheme to make it better and understand more. Of course, we're still following the Trump and Clinton election as well. Because
What's your goal with TweetSense? What would you like it to do?
That's what we're figuring out right now.
Okay.
Ultimately, like, it's to really change the way we find public opinion. So instead of asking people questions, instead of paying people to do market surveys, instead of wasting a team's time to, you know, go around and look at Twitter feeds, should just automatically be able to find people who are already complaining about the issues and finding those people immediately who want to be found instead of hoping they come to you with random ad buys.
Well, and you also think it's more honest because they're actually just expressing this as a public opinion as opposed to it being solicited.
Right, So if someone calls you on the phone, say from the Hillary campaign, asking you questions, say you're just naturally a nice person and you sort of give them some slack and you like, yeah, I'll vote for Hillary and whatnot. You know, there's always going to be some sort of bias introduced no matter what kind of surveying there is. But social media is it's just public opinion. It's, you know, people want to put that out there. This is truly how they feel. So having all this content out there to just dig through is pretty great, in terms of predicting certain things such as elections.
That's Cody Pawlowski along with William Wijaya. They're both founders of TweetSense, and they're about to start their sophomore year at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you very much
for
having
us.
Speaking of Donald Trump, multiple news outlets, including the Indianapolis Star, are now reporting that he will be announcing Indiana Governor Mike Pence as his vice presidential pick. We're expecting an official announcement on that tomorrow morning. Stay tuned to NPR News throughout the day for more on that. That does it for us today. Tomorrow on the 21st, we're continuing our summer book reading list series. Chicago science fiction writer Marcus Sakey joins us. He's the guy behind the Brilliance trilogy. He's going to give us his favorite sci-fi picks. And Joanne Manister, that's AKA the science goddess on Twitter, she's going to share her picks for her favorite science books. Do you have suggestions for us, especially for that list, science and science fiction reads? You can email us at books@21stshow.org. You can always tweet us at 21st Show, or you can post it on Facebook. We'll have that list up later today if you search for us, like the 21st on Facebook, and you can see what we're doing. Tomorrow, we're also going to be speaking with an Illinois woman who just celebrated a very special birthday, her 102nd. You can always find past shows on our NPR One app if you search for the 21st. All that information is on our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Halla Delahi, Travis Dansel, and Ben Thomas Payne. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.